acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 66, Orientation, Thursday, January 15th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yin Hu Cha Yuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. This week's episode includes the following segments: ever-expanding skill set, off the shelf, the back porch, the front porch, yarn lover at large, double happiness, and so forth. I hope you've had a great week and that you've been doing well since you listened to the last episode of Yarns at Yin Hu. The Ravelry group currently has 328 members, and since the last episode, there has been a new iTunes review from B Starstuff. Thank you so much for that review. And I'd like to welcome a new listener, Kato2309, who is Carolyn, but she's known as Kato, and Carolyn is from Germany. Welcome to the group. Ever-expanding skill set. In the last episode I recorded, I asked a question from 100 projects and put it up for general discussion, and Yarns at Yin Hu listeners really took on that challenge and began great discussions on the Ravelry thread online. So I'd like to review some of the various comments and some highlights. The question had to do with knitting from stash being akin to cooking from items in the pantry. And do you fall into that category, or do you like to find a recipe and then shop for the recipe? I think I identify most with a post from V. D'Amelia, who was very eloquent in stating that, and I'm going to paraphrase it here and probably chop it up a little bit, but she said that she likes to keep a lot of things on hand and only shop for a few key ingredients, or maybe just shop for a few things that are fresh and in season, and most of what she needs is available in her pantry. That's the way I most like to cook. That's not what is always happening in my kitchen, but I feel like that's the ideal way, I think, because that's what I saw my mom doing in her kitchen as I grew up. She had almost everything on hand, and then she would just get a few things at the store. There are great organization tips in January. The theme for our hashtag Power Pantry is organization, and folks have been asking for advice, providing tips, and also sharing photographs of their pantries. There are even some before and afters. It's very exciting. So I'd like to thank Joanna Spring and X Farm Girl for posting some photographs from their pantry. And also there were organizational tips. So Joanna of Knitspin Farm has a use it now shelf where every once in a while when she does go through her pantry, she takes older items or things that need to be used up and puts them right in the front at eye level. And that is the use it now shelf, and things should be used from there before you're reaching all over the pantry for other items. Heather 01851 swears by her Lazy Susan. She also says she likes to shop for a few ingredients and keep a lot of things on hand, but she provided photographs of her Lazy Susan and the organization that it provides in kind of a dead corner. Corner cabinets can be very difficult. Things get lost back there, and you might even be reluctant to use them if you don't have a good organizational tool. So I think that Lazy Susan tip is a good one. Dusty Tree Knits provided a link to cloth bulk bin bags. It's a little tutorial for these bags, and they're really cute, and they have embroidered tags on them that says what's inside. It seems like it would also be a great idea for a gift. Both Kate Pricey and Kato2309 said that they like to have a basket on the counter or have frequently used items right on the countertop next to the stove. And that reminded me of something I'd like to share with you from a small booklet that I've been reading on my Kindle. And unfortunately, this booklet came without the figures and illustrations that are referenced. I did find a few of them online, but I think it would be fascinating to see this original book and see the figures and illustrations. It's called American Woman's Home, and it was co-authored by Catherine Esther Beecher and Harriet Beecher, who you will know as Harriet Beecher Stowe. There is a lengthy explanation about how to organize a kitchen and pantry. And in the research I've done, apparently these two women were revolutionary in suggesting that some aspects of the pantry, which had been storage, even a room very separate from the dining area or the cooking area, would be brought together. So in the days with homes that had many servants, there would be more specific areas for certain work to be done. And as homes and families became more modernized and servants became fewer and fewer, and the people of the house, most likely the lady of the house, would be doing the cooking, the food preparation, it became necessary to have things closer at hand and less packed away in a different part of the house. So there's a pretty extensive explanation of how to organize one's kitchen and one's dining. But in particular, I'd like to share a little excerpt that has to do with the pantry specifically. Under the cook form are shelves and shelf boxes for unbolted wheat, cornmeal, rye, etc. Beneath these for white and brown sugar are wooden can pails, which are the best articles in which to keep these constant necessities. Besides them is the tin molasses can with a tight, movable cover and a cork in the spout. This is much better than a jug for molasses, and also for vinegar and oil, being easier to clean and to handle. Other articles and implements for cooking can be arranged on or under the shelves on the side and front. A small cooking tray holding pepper, salt, dredging box, knife, and spoon should stand close by hand at the stove. So that is from American Woman's Home by Catherine Esther Beecher and Harriet Beecher Stowe. The question I'd like to pose to you this episode is, what items do you like to stock up on when you encounter a can-can sale or just any kind of a supermarket sale? Are there certain things that you tend to buy in quantity? Are there certain things that you can't resist, even if you know you have quite a few already on hand? I'd like to know. How do you stock up? What do you stock up on, especially this time of year? Don't forget that you can use hashtag Power Pantry to mark your photos and comments when you post them on social media. If you are not a member of the Ravelry group and you'd like to share some organizational tips or some stories of your own pantry, feel free to leave a comment on any episode on the Yarns at Yinhu website. Off the shelf. One of the things I've noticed about myself since developing an interest in so many different handcrafts is that I don't do nearly as much reading as I used to do. And in an effort to do a bit more reading and have a deeper experience with a work of literature, I thought that the Yarns at Yinhu podcast could host a read-along this winter. I've posted some of the details on the Ravelry group, and I'd just like to give listeners an idea of what the read-along will be like and invite anyone who's interested to join in. The work I've selected is a short novel called Housekeeping by Marilyn Robinson. It's a first novel, and it is not a new book. It's from 1980, so it is probably pretty easy to find an inexpensive copy or find a copy at your library. And we'll be reading it over the course of 6 weeks. Of course, you can take as long as you like to read the book, but that's for the purposes of the read-along. I've developed a chapter or two every week for 6 weeks, and then I'll be working with some listeners to the Yarns at Yinhu podcast who have sort of volunteered to help me out with some structuring of this read-along to have some different topics and some ideas for folks to chime in, maybe share favorite passages, an insight on a character, different things like that. And I will certainly enjoy reading the work and talking about it online and on the podcast with listeners. Just to give you a little bit of background and maybe whet your appetite for reading a novel like this, I thought I would share a little bit of the cover matter that's on the copy of the book I have. The New York Times reviewer who first gave this work a lot of attention, and that was largely due to its unexpected popularity, is Anatole Breuillard, who wrote, "Here's a first novel that sounds as if the author has been treasuring it up all her life. You can feel in the book a gathering, voluptuous release of confidence, a delighted surprise at the unexpected capacities of language, a close, careful fondness for people that we thought only saints felt." It's a pretty resounding endorsement of a first novel. I can imagine what Marilyn Robinson must have been thinking when she read that and found out that was a review of her work. I think this is a great book for rereading. I will certainly be rereading it. But, you know, reading it for the first time is also a delight. Doris Lessing wrote, "I found myself reading slowly, then more slowly. This is not a novel to be hurried through. Every sentence is a delight." And the summary, I suppose, that's included on my book is like this: a modern classic that brilliantly portrays the impermanence of all things, especially beauty and happiness. Housekeeping is the story of Ruth and her younger sister, Lucille, who grow up haphazardly, first under the care of their competent grandmother, then of two comically bumbling great aunts, and finally of Sylvie, the eccentric and remote sister of their dead mother. The family house is in the small town of Fingerbone, on a glacial lake in the far west. It is a town chastened by an outsized landscape, an extravagant weather, and chastened again by an awareness that the whole of human history had occurred elsewhere. Ruth and Lucille's struggle toward adulthood beautifully illuminates the price of loss and survival and the dangerous and deep undertow of transience. So I hope you will consider reading or rereading Housekeeping by Marilynne Robinson. We will begin the read-along on February 1st, and that first week is simply Chapter 1. So we'll take it very slowly. It's not a long book at all, and we'll go slowly. You can certainly go as slowly as you like, and if you have ideas for reading along or something you would like to hear about or know about, I hope that you will let me know. The Back Porch. This week I completed one of the remaining pieces of gift knitting that I was working on. All through December, I decided to do a different kind of gift knitting, and I joined the Knitmore girls in their Grinch along, and I stopped knitting gifts for other people. I was proud to be done with knitting gifts for other people, and I just worked on things that were of interest to me. In particular, I worked on patterns, or I worked with products that had been given to me as gifts over the year. And this is a pattern I was very excited to knit. It was a gift from my pen pal, Fernanda. The title of the pattern is Phi. It's designed by Jennifer Dassau. It's a long, thin shawl, and it's based on the Fibonacci sequence. So there are two colors, and they alternate based on a sequence of numbers in the Fibonacci series. And if you know what that is, then you'll have a very good idea of the direction that the shawl takes once you start with the main color and start adding the contrast color in. This was great fun to knit. It's a very clever design for a pattern. And I very much enjoyed knitting it in some Lisa Souza BFL Sport yarn that I purchased at Rhinebeck. I purchased a raisin color, which is like a brownish purple, and then a brilliant, bright, saturated yellow. So the two played off each other very well. I used US size 5 needles. And the knitting was made even more enjoyable, and I think the finished product even better than I expected, because I used a tutorial for carrying yarn with a nearly invisible stitch on the right side of the work. You can see the stitch you've carried up the wrong side, but on the right side, it's nearly invisible. This video tutorial was by Fresh Stitches. It's very clear what you need to do, and the result was great. So it kept me from having to weave in ends, except for at the beginning and the end of the shawl, and it has a great arc to the design, and it knit up quite quickly. I did make one modification to the pattern, which was to shorten the Fibonacci sequence a little bit, because I realized I wouldn't have enough yarn for the largest part of the contrast color, and I decided to alter it and just, instead of going 13 to 21, I did 13 and then 13 again, and then worked my way back down the sequence. I was not knitting this shawl as a gift. I was knitting it because I was fascinated by the design. I was very pleased to have been given the pattern as a gift, and I really wanted to use the yarn that I purchased at Rhinebeck. But when I finished the shawl, I just felt like it should be the possession of one of my math teacher colleagues. So today I had a bit of a late lunch and I made a gift of the shawl to her, which was kind of a surprise, a post-holiday surprise. So I'm very grateful for the gift of that pattern and all of the fun I had knitting it. And I think it has a great home now. And maybe, who knows, maybe it could even be part of a lesson plan someday. Once again, that pattern is Phi by Jennifer Dessau. It is available as a Ravelry download. The front porch. This week, I am beginning a new project with some recently spun hand-spun yarn. The yarn is my first true three-ply. I spun 140 yards of a three-ply. It's a woolen spun yarn, and the fiber is a gorgeous Shetland alpaca in a silvery gray color that comes from Sherry of Spinner's End Farm. I had knit an Abigail hood during the month of December, and I sent that off to one of my cousins as a gift, and I've wanted to knit another one. So this bulky three-ply, I think, is just the thing. I began the pattern last night, and I'm knitting it on US size 9 needles, and I went just beyond what the adult large asked for in terms of a cast on. I went to 72 stitches. And I think that will make a nice broad brim and a pretty quick hat. This hat has braids on the sides. And depending on how much yarn I have left over after knitting the hat, I might make them nice and long. But I think this will be a fantastic winter hat. I realized in dressing for warm weather that I have quite a few hand-knit things, but none of them really match or go together. And so when I put on a bunch of hand-knits, I look a little bit haphazard. And I thought it would be nice, especially if I were wearing them to shop or to work or something like that, if I had things that weren't exactly a set, but maybe were the same color family or looked like they go together. And so it's one of my goals to knit a hat and mittens, maybe thrummed mittens. I'm still thinking about a pattern and a beautiful cowl that aren't necessarily from the same pattern and designer as a coordinating set, but nevertheless look like they go together. And I think that will be a very grown-up look for winter hand knits, and something I would like very much. So I'll be working on that over the next few weeks. Maybe by the end of January, I can get all of those projects either completed or at least underway. And once again, that's the Abigail Hood by Elisa McLaughlin. It's a pattern available as a download on Ravelry. And mine was a gift from Marianne H. Yarn Lover at Large. Last Friday, on January 9th, I attended a yarn tasting at my local yarn store, Mountain Knits and Pearls, in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. And it was the first yarn tasting of this kind that I've attended, and I thought it was just really cool the way the proprietor of this yarn store put everything together. It was also very well attended. I think there were about 25 or 30 knitters attending this event. And when we went in, there were three long tables set up in the back of the shop. And each table, it was kind of like a variety of place settings. So there was a bowl, and in the bowl, there was a different kind of yarn. It was clearly labeled. The label from the yarn was propped up in the bowl. And the yarn had already been started on a set of circular needles, the size appropriate to the yarn itself. So we were invited to sit down in front of something that looked interesting to us, and everyone did. And then we started knitting with the yarn right in front of us. Joanne was sort of keeping time. It started out like super organized, like these things do, and then it sort of trailed off. People were having conversations and things like that. But you would knit for a while. You would knit for a few minutes or a round or two with the yarn in front of you. And there was a tasting guide with photographs of all of the yarn and the company and the fiber content of the yarn, the yardage, all that kind of information. So you could keep notes as you were going of your thoughts about the yarn or patterns you might have in mind. And Joanne was talking about them also as we were knitting and mentioning different things. And then you would pass the yarn to the person to your left and sample all of the yarns at your table. And then sort of restaurant style, all the yarn bowls went back onto a tray, and then the tray was moved to another table and your table got a new tray of yarns to try. Joanne was also showing us samples knit with the different yarns. And we all received, this is the first time I've ever had anything like this. She called it a magalog. It's a yarn catalog from Skacell. It's the winter 2014-15, volume 6. She said she's received several of these and everyone gets better and better. I was so impressed because this magalog had information about all of the different yarns that were available from this company, but it also had patterns, excellent photographs of the patterns knit up. And then Joanne had some of these things, samples of some of these things for us to touch and feel and look at while we were knitting so we could pass those things around. And we got to keep our copy, which was really cool. So there's a lot of great knitting ideas in there. And then at the end of the night, after all of that fun and snacks and coffee and lots of talking, we were returned, or the yarn that we started with was returned to us, and we could keep it. Oh my goodness. So all Joanne said was she needed her needles back because she had used her own needles to get all of these different yarns started. And what we were knitting could end up being a relatively small hat, like a preemie hat. So we had the option of either keeping the knitting that was done and just putting that onto scrap yarn and giving her her needles back, or we could just unravel the whole thing and take the needles out. The needles that we were using were also of various kinds and different values, different price points. And she would talk about the needles or answer questions about the needles. And some of us were talking as we were knitting that we couldn't necessarily tell whether it was the needles we were enjoying or not enjoying or the yarn. So those two things together were kind of inseparable as an experience. But I knew I was enjoying that first yarn that I sat in front of. It is called Triology, and it's 75% wool, 15% silk, 10% linen. It's a fingering weight, 100 grams, is 440 yards, and it was just rustic enough, just heathered and interesting enough, and in these muted browns and blues and tans and grays. Oh my goodness, it's really nice yarn, and I just felt so lucky to be able to go home with this yarn. So I have no idea what I will be knitting with that, but I thought I would just tell you a little bit about my yarn tasting. Have you been to a yarn tasting? It seems kind of fun, like maybe even something you could post on your own. If everyone brings some interesting yarns from their stash, maybe things that they're looking to send to new homes, and you just bring that, you get it started on some needles, and then everyone passes the yarn around and gives everything a try, and then you end up going home with something. I think that would be fun. double happiness. I think there's nothing like receiving packages in the mail to boost your spirits. And I've really been enjoying over the past couple of weeks some packages that have arrived. A few were meant to get here by Christmas, and a few were just because packages. And it's just been a lot of fun to enjoy the contents and to plan some gifts of my own, just going out for no reason in particular, but to brighten someone's day. There are two kinds of people in the world. People who enjoy black licorice and people who think it is vile. And I am one of the former. I really like black licorice a lot. And when I was a student abroad in Bath as an undergrad, I lived in an international dormitory and made friends with quite a few Scandinavian girls, and black licorice and the anise flavor is a very popular flavoring in that part of the world, much more popular than in the United States. And my Danish friend Sandra had regular shipments of a candy called Turkish pepper. These are lozenge-shaped hard candies, and inside they're sort of drilled through, and inside is a mixture of very finely powdered salt and pepper. And the pepper is very hot. It's alarmingly hot. And she got me hooked on these candies, and it has been so long since I've had them. And this week in the mail, we received a package from a family friend who's living in Germany, and she must have remembered that I like these candies, and so she got her hands on some. I assume they're easier to find in Germany, but I don't really know how much she had to go out of her way to get them. But I have a whole bag, and Samuel is not fond of licorice candy, so I don't have to share. They're just amazing. And even eating them just brought all of these memories back of being an undergrad abroad and all of the international friends that I had. One of our friends, Haley, who's from Finland, we didn't know that she had done this, but she had worked on this a few weeks before we were all about to leave Bath. And she had pulverized a whole bunch of these Turkish pepper candies and put them into vodka and made something called Hot Shot. And that was our treat on the last night before we left. We all made toasts and celebrated, and we had this very special drink. So it's been wonderful just to enjoy handmade things and thoughtful gifts and just because types of packages this week. I think sometimes we feel maybe a little bit upset with ourselves if we didn't get to do everything we planned to do before the holiday season. And really, I think it's just as much of a blessing and maybe even more fun when you're not distracted by the holidays and you receive something special in the mail. So put that special something into the mail, or send someone a note or a little sweet treat or a little something that you made just to let them know that you're thinking of them, and it will just really brighten their day and lift their mood. And so forth. I'm very eager to spend a lot of time over this long weekend working on some sewing projects. I've been using a pattern tutorial. It's a free video pattern tutorial that I found on Pinterest to make some small wedge project bags. And I've also been using some tutorials from Creative Bug. Creative Bug is an online tutorial site. It doesn't have the interactivity that Craftsy does. It's certainly not as popular or with as many classes, but it can be good for ideas. And I have used quite a few of the free pattern tutorials, and now I'm starting to use some of the tutorials that are subscription-based. The embroidery stitches that I know I've learned from a teacher named Rebecca Rehnquist. I think she's based in Brooklyn, New York, and I really enjoy her tutorials on Creative Bug. Sometimes the video quality or the streaming, I'm not sure, but I think it's the video quality, is a little bit fuzzy. And the video jumps around a little bit, but for the most part, the videos are good because her explanations are very clear. Her manner of speaking is very clear, and the way she shows you how to do the stitches, I find very accessible. She's very charming as well, so it's easy to watch her tutorials. And then I found that she had a free tutorial for a little keepsake needle holder, which is a great way to line up all of your embroidery needles when they are filled with thread before you begin a project. And I really like to do that when I'm embroidering. I like to spend one evening, maybe when I'm distracted or I just don't feel like really concentrating on anything, I just take out all of my needles and all of my embroidery thread. I think about the colors I want to use for a project, and then I work on threading needles with a variety of, you know, maybe one strand of thread, two strands, three strands, and I put them all into these little keepsake needle cases that I made. And it's a very easy project with a fabric backing and a piece of felt and then a piece of ribbon, and then you could add a decorative tag or button or something like that. So this weekend I made several keepsake needle cases to give as gifts. And then I worked on a whole bunch of project bags that eventually will be given as gifts. It's not my goal to ever turn sewing into some kind of a business or have an Etsy shop or anything like that. As I mentioned in a previous podcast, my interest in sewing, even though my ability is not there yet, my interest in sewing is really in garment making. But I like to build my skills by trying some other projects and doing things that don't require a huge amount of expensive fabric. So I've been working on some project bags and trying to find tutorials that I like. One of the things that's been a challenge for me as I'm working on these project bags is the complexity of the fabric that I select for the bag. I'm pretty attracted to these charming prints on cotton, and they really need to be oriented properly, or you'll end up with a project bag that has upside down zebra heads on it. Or you'll pick this cute little fabric with birds and bird cages on it, and then you'll make the bag and the birds are at the bottom of the bag and all you see is bird cages and birds with their heads cut off. That's what happened to me. And I am really coming to appreciate how difficult it is and how valuable it is when you see these project bags for sale online, that all of these charming fabrics need to be handled very carefully so that when you get the bag, you get the benefit of that whole charming print that's on the bag. And I've just been experimenting with dollar pieces, fat quarters that I've purchased at our local AC Moore. And so I'm not really shattered if I make a mistake with that fabric. But the Sew and Vac shop where Samuel purchased my machine has a wide range of higher quality fabrics, and they have Downton Abbey fabrics. I don't know if I mentioned that in the previous podcast, but they have Downton Abbey fabrics, and I purchased just a little bit of fabric to make one of the zippered bags that was in the Heather Ross pattern book. And I found that bag a little bit fiddly, and I didn't understand properly how the pieces were sewn together. So I cut out this beautiful fabric. It's a beautiful gray fabric, and it has a print of the Abbey, and it says Downton Abbey underneath. And when I sewed the bag, all of the Downton Abbeys are kind of on their sides. I was showing this bag to my mom and saying, oh, I'm so upset, you know, I didn't get it to come out like I wanted. And she said, well, if you had cut it the other way, she said, some of the Downton Abbeys would be level with the ground, but on the other side of the bag, they would be upside down because this is one piece of fabric. And I didn't realize that. So I'm learning how to think about the way things are oriented. I guess the same way I learned with crochet and with knitting, you're working on this flat piece of fabric that you're making as you knit it, but then you need to imagine how that's going to come together in this three-dimensional garment. And so some of the same skills are at play, but it's just the materials that differ. The final thing I wanted to mention in this segment is the project, the garment project that I will be working on this weekend. I have purchased the fabric for this project, and I think it's going to take several sessions to complete. It is called the Birds of a Feather Maxi Skirt. It's a design and pattern by Anna Maria Horner. She has quite a few patterns out, and she is the teacher of a Creative Bug tutorial class where she explains how to make this skirt and all of the skills that are needed. This is a maxi length skirt with an elastic waistband. So the construction of the skirt is quite simple, but in the tutorial, she shows you how to draft your own pattern from your measurements for a maxi skirt. So this could be easily replicated in a whole variety of garments. And I thought that was a good skill set to learn. The skirt is cut on the bias, which I have not done. So I think that would be not only very flattering, but a good set of skills to learn. And then the stunning part of this skirt is that it has 8 applique feathers at the bottom. And these feathers are made by sewing a variety of strips of differently colored fabric, fabric that should contrast or play against the main color of the skirt. And then there's a template that I've printed for the right side of the feather and the left side of the feather, and then another 1 inch or so strip for the, it's not really a stem, but the center portion of the feather. And the tutorial shows you how to do the applique techniques and all of the sewing that you need to create the feather and get it to work properly on the surface of the skirt. So I will start this weekend with making those applique feathers. I still need to have the fabric for the body of the skirt laundered. So likely I will work on the skirt portion in a future sewing session. I'm really looking forward to sewing this weekend, and I'm eager to hear from anyone who has made things based on sewing tutorials, either online sewing tutorials from YouTube or something from Creative Bug or Craftsy. What did you like? Did you make the garment? How did it turn out? Are there any recommendations that you have? I would love to hear from you about this topic because I anticipate there is going to be a lot more sewing in my future.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes, or joining the show's Ravelry group, or liking the Yarns at Yinhu Facebook page. Music for this episode is So Wheat, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Chris DeLong and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Linda Kurt sings, but out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's ever get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.